Welcome to the Culture, Faith, and Politics podcast. I'm Pat Conkey, and I'm here once again today with Dave Johnson, formerly pastor of Church of the Open Door, and now the executive director of Things That Remain. And we've been talking for several weeks through Tim Alberta's book, The Kingdom, the Power, and the Glory. And so we're going to continue today with chapter 7, which is honestly a pretty disturbing chapter. So I think that from talking with Dave earlier, he and I both had very similar reactions as we read this chapter. I know for myself, I felt a little bit sick to my stomach. I was angry, a little bit depressed, any number of things. And so I just want to have Dave just kind of summarize the chapter a little bit and talk about your initial thoughts. And then we can just dive into a few points.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. Well, one of the things we've told you before is that every one of Alberta's chapters are about a place. And this is a chapter where he goes back to his hometown in Michigan. And he talks about a guy I think he might have mentioned earlier in one of the previous chapters, Bill Bolin, who is a pastor in his hometown in Michigan of a church called Floodgate Church. And the big thing for him, this Bolin guy, was on Easter Sunday of 2020, he did something he'd never done before. And that was he did a 15-minute diatribe about politics and Trump in particular, and was very favorable of Trump and kind of bringing all this Fox News kind of things into the pulpit before his sermon. And he kind of continued that, and he kind of found traction around this relatively predictable script that a lot of these guys use of fomenting fear. The libs are coming after us. And we need to be afraid. And so we need to get ready to fight. And we have a common enemy. And in 1 year, from 2020 to 21, he went from a church of 100 people to 1,500. So now he's getting on media. He's getting all sorts of attention. So he's kind of a celebrity in some ways in a pretty small pond, but because I never heard of him. But anyway, he's not a nationally known guy. It's not like I know of everybody. But one of the big things was that COVID was a real catalytic thing because it kind of became proof. And it's weird to hear this stuff because I never knew that this was going on in some people's minds. But proof, COVID was proof that the government was wanting to shut us down. And this was their opportunity. So there's been this plan for years and years and years to shut down the church. Christians are being persecuted. They're coming after us. And COVID was like a test. Like, oh, we're going to use COVID. And so all of the shutting down of churches, they shut down everything, you guys. They shut down schools. They didn't just go from churches. They were trying to save people's lives. But these people don't believe that narrative at all. They're coming after us. And so that was a very catalytic thing. And everybody's going, amen, amen, amen. I think when you talk about, Pat, the thing that was depressing and discouraging, I don't, again, going into the details of quotes, you can read the book,
right?
All of you who are listening. But these people in this church who Alberta interviewed were deeply into, I mean, the things they said were right out of QAnon.
Right.
And then Bolin would treat them sometimes as if they were facts. And sometimes he would just throw out, you know, I'm not sure, but maybe QAnon's right when they say there's child sacrifice. He didn't say there was child sacrifice that the Democrats were doing, but he said, I don't know. You never know. Not good. In fact, he quoted some nurse who said, you know, in my hospital, there's only two in our whole hospital here from COVID. And there's 140 who are here because of reactions to the vaccination. So the vaccine was being demonized. And that was a lie. That was a flat out lie, which doesn't bother me as a pastor. Not all of you become teachers, that whole thing. The other guy that kind of stood out in the chapter was David Barton, who we'll talk about more in the next episode because the whole chapter is his. But this guy kind of has become the sweetheart of Charlie Kirk, who we'll talk about in a couple more chapters in the Turning Point USA. But he's a fraud. David Barton presents himself as a scholar, and he's not, an historian, and he's not. He wrote a book on Thomas Jefferson that Thomas Nelson, his publisher, recalled because there were so many distortions and inaccuracies and flat out lies that Thomas Nelson didn't want their name on it anymore. So he's in this thing too. And the disillusionment, here were two things that happened to me. One, I'm wondering, do these guys who are saying this, Bolin, who went from 100 to 115 and even beyond that now, do they believe what they're saying? Like out of this deep conviction, or are they, did they just figure out how to draw a crowd?
Right.
And I'm more inclined to believe that they're full of baloney.
Right.
And that's not the original Greek. The other thing that was disillusioning was when Tim Alberta went to this Floodgate Church, and there was some sort of event there where Barton was speaking, actually, at the Floodgate Church, the Bolin Church. And he saw an elder from his dad's church there. And this is an elder, his name is Vernon Hoffner. I can name him because he was named in the book. But it was like, it was, I could tell it was disillusioning to Alberta, because this is a guy who was an elder on in his dad's church. And part of his job was vetting, you know, other elders and vetting new staff. So he was a discerning guy. And here he is with his wife at this conference, and they drank the Kool-Aid.
Right.
And I want to go into the, I mean, I have some quotes here, but read the book.
Right.
But that was this, it was like, you kind of get in your mind the kind of person who buys this stuff, and he did not fit the pattern. You think of people who really don't know the scriptures. They really are shallow. They really are, they don't have much depth. And this guy did. And so it.
It wasn't a protection him, for him.
It did me too. It did me too. You know, it's kind of wow. So that's my overview.
Yeah. Yeah. And a few things that you said there triggered some thoughts in my own head. Like when you said, you know, so this Bolin is a big, big star, you know, in his local environment, but you hadn't heard of him. And it did lead me to think, like, how many of these people are there out there? You know, like, is there one in every city now? I wonder if there's these churches that are like sort of a honeypot for conspiracy minded people to all go there, you know, and I have a feeling there probably are, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of churches like this run by people like that.
That's a great question, Pat, because when I reflect on, we live in Minneapolis, both of you and I, here in St. Paul, I'm in Minneapolis.
Right.
I'm not aware of that here. It might be here, but I'm going next, in 2 weeks, I'm going to, Chandler, Arizona, a pastor friend of mine, and there's a real strong presence of this kind of stuff very close to him. And he's having to navigate that whole thing with his people. And anyway, so it's very real in certain environments. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And, you know, his church is called Floodgate. And when I was reading this, I was thinking it should be called Hellscape Church. You know, it's like I look at it as like the hellscape of what could happen if people don't push back on this stuff. Is this what we want, you know, the church to become? But when we warn about, you know, the spiritual danger of just allowing this sort of stuff to happen without pushing back on it, this is what I'm talking about. This is a real church. This isn't a fictional account. This is a real church. And I know there are more of them. I don't know how many. I suspect quite a few more, but this is real. This is something that this is the natural conclusion of not pushing back on lies. And one of the things that I really reacted strongly to on this is that this Bolin is like the exact opposite of who I was always trying to be when I would preach, because I was always really careful with my words, to the point where like the critique of me that I often got in my preaching was that I gave too many disclaimers, you know, so it would end up lacking power in some way, because I was like, but you know, it could be this, it could be
sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. I was like overly cautious in the way that I talked, but I did that because of things like James 3, you know, where James 3 says, not many of you should become teachers, because we know that those who teach will be judged more strictly. And I took that warning seriously because it's like, I just know from standing in the pulpit, just the very fact of standing in the pulpit, you have weight to your words there. And it doesn't matter. Like, I could be the least charismatic person in the world, but the fact that I'm standing in a pulpit and I'm saying things gives power to my words. And there are certain people that are going to listen to what I say, and I'm going to be held accountable for what I say.
Yeah.
And so I have trouble even grappling with somebody who doesn't take that seriously. Somebody who can just shamelessly.
I think when you see people who found this little thing and everybody cheers and all of a sudden we go from 100 to 115, there's a kind of fear that shuts you down. Okay. And hold you back. And it's, all through the Bible, fear not, don't be afraid, say what you think. Right. But we ought to be a little bit afraid, those of us who are teachers.
Right.
And I was. And here's why I think that verse is so powerful when he says, don't all you become teachers, stricter judgment. Here's why I think God's upset about that. Is because if you're a teacher, people will follow you. Where are you bringing them? Are you bringing them off a cliff? These guys are.
Right.
They are.
Right.
And it's not going to go well for them. Are they going to hell? That isn't even in my mind.
Right.
One day
right.
There will be weeping and mourning because they will see. In this life or the next, they'll see and they'll go, wow.
Yeah.
I wish I would have kept my mouth shut and stayed at a church of 100 people where I just cared for them because Yeah, it's really serious.
Yeah.
I think both of us are feeling the weight of this.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. And it's funny because, like, I know that I can be really self-deprecating sometimes. Here's my disclaimer right now already. Here, I'm doing it again. But but there's just a fact that, like, you and I both were preachers for a long time. You a lot longer than me. But I always knew that just who I am, I sort of knew what I could do well. And I could preach to, 200 people. That was kind of the max that our church grew to. And it was because of, I'm not like the most dynamic speaker or whatever, I was content with this. I was building this smaller community that was super real, and we loved each other, and we were doing things in the kingdom. And I was super confident that you had a much larger ministry, and, anybody can watch the two of us and know that you're a more dynamic speaker and everything. There's nothing wrong with a ministry growing. And, I don't think either of us are saying there's something wrong with having a large ministry, but the point is whether it was me with my really, maybe overly cautious approach, you with your more engaging approach, I would say you were always super careful, and you still are, about everything that you say. Like anybody who listens knows that. So I'm just saying it's not against a large church. It's about what's your goal in attracting a crowd, and how are you doing it?
Yeah. Yep. What's driving it? And even in you, I loved what you said, Pat, about accepting this is who I am, and accept that's actually, you look in the scriptures and some of the people I even know out in the, in the country are noticing trends and what's really working. Mm-hmm. It really is a church of that size or even smaller.
Right.
Where you're building a kind of kingdom community.
Right.
But I had to accept the fact that we grew. I never went into ministry going, oh, we're going to be a mega church. That wasn't on my, honestly. So right. I had to accept we're big, and I'm not sure I like it. It was part of my burnout in the early 90s because I didn't know how to handle all of that stuff. But anyway.
Yeah. And so that's why it's really hard for me when I see a guy who's just like not thinking about any of that and just drawing this crowd, And one thing that you said was you kind of wondered if these people really believe what they're saying. Well, he explicitly says at least some of the stuff that he's saying he does not believe. There's a quote where, James, in that passage from James, it says that, we got to be careful that we're not preaching out of selfish ambition. And I would say he's driven by selfish ambition. He's kind of not afraid to say so. Between the lines, he doesn't say I'm driven by selfish ambition, but he says things like, hey, this is what started to work. When I started to talk about COVID and I started to, you know, engage in these like, you know, conspiracy theory things, it worked. And I drew a crowd. Yeah. And then he justifies that by saying, but my biblical teaching is always sound. And, you know, and so he's saying, I'm growing the church by saying all this crazy stuff, but my biblical teaching is sound. And that's the core thing. It's like, people aren't coming there for the biblical teaching. They're coming there for the crazy. And, you know, he says that this one chilling comment when Tim Alberta kind of calls him out on this, he says, well, firebrand statements have been a part of the pulpit and part of politics for as long as we've been a nation. And there's a long history of both sides exaggerating. So he's just admitting, you know, I'm making firebrand statements. I'm exaggerating. And I just think that that's a really dangerous, that's for somebody who's standing in the pulpit knowing that they're exaggerating and thinking somehow they're going to serve God that way. Yeah.
Right. And another thing, just off of what you just said, that he said was because there was a point in that chapter where Alberta was talking to him and he was backpedaling a little bit. Well, Bolin was backpedaling because he recognized that some people were taking what he was saying further than what he meant. And but that's why don't all become teachers, because people will take it further than what you meant, especially if you're full of crap. And this guy, and the other thing I was going to say, again, off of something you said earlier, was this was a guy who was a pastor of small churches all across the country. Alberta said something about from here to here. And then he was in Michigan in this church for 10 years. And it was, but he never did what you did. He never said, this is the measure of my gift. And this is the flock I've been given by God. I think there was something in him that was going, it's gotta be bigger. It's gotta be more. Right. And I think he accidentally stumbled on this thing, and when it worked, it was like, wow.
Yeah. And then he didn't know how to handle it.
Shallow, and this story is him and also dangerous anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And you had said earlier when we were talking about this, you talked about, you know, some bigger thoughts that you had about this chapter, you know, about, you know, trying to help deal with, you know, like the emotions that were coming up about it, and where have you seen this before? I just like you to, you know, go into that a little bit.
Yeah, thanks. Well, one of the things I've been doing, and Pat, you and I talk offline about this a lot, is when I read these chapters, I try to think of what's the takeaway? Like, what can we give people that will give them a way to kind of spot this stuff wherever they see it? What are the characteristics? Because a horse of a different color is still a horse. Mm-hmm. So how can I spot the horse when it gets dressed in Bible verses that fit into this politics stuff? So what I think we've got is here in this chapter with Bill Bolin, David Barton, the whole thing. What came to me was, and the other thing I ask every time I preach, and I invite people at Open Door have over the years, where are we in the story? We're part of the big story of God. So where are we? And where are we in this story? Like if you tell a parable, are you the father who's willing to receive the son when he comes back? Or are you the son who's gone away? Blah, blah, blah. Where are you in the story? So where are we in this one? Mm-hmm. And I think this is another part that was chilling, Pat, for me. I think this story we're in this chapter is of biblical proportions. You know how people say that. And what I mean is that I went back into the Old Testament, and it starts with, I'll give you Jeremiah 5:30. Listen to these words. Jeremiah is speaking to the people of God. So it's like speaking to what we're trying to do, speaking to people who know God, love God through Jesus. But even before that, the people of God, Jeremiah says, an appalling and horrible thing has happened in the land. Judah is the land, people of God. For my prophets prophesy falsely. Stop right there. I think Bolin and Barton are prophesying falsely, and that's bad, okay? But the people could go, he's lying. he's full of crap. But the people, it says in the next verse, my prophets prophesy falsely, but my people love it. So, and that's chilling. Isaiah 30, verse 10. The people say to the seers, do not see. Do not prophesy what is right. Like Winans. Now, Winans is the pastor of Alberta's dad's church, who was losing people. I hope this is making sense. Who was losing people to Boland's church because Winans was staying in the pocket of what the gospel actually is. So in that context, hear that verse again. The people say to the seers, do not see, do not prophesy what is right. And they went to the prophets, and when the Winans didn't say what they wanted to hear about Trump, they just went to the prophet down the road. So back to Isaiah 30, verse 10, the prophet Isaiah says, speak to us smooth things. This is the people of God saying this to the prophet. Speak to us smooth things and prophesy illusions, which I believe Bolins and Barton are both doing. Micah 2, 1. One more text. If a man would go about uttering wind, it's baloney. Yeah, it would be not the original Greek once again, right? If a man would go about uttering wind and lies, Bolton and Barton, saying, I will speak of wine and strong drink. Stop right there. He's not talking about getting him drunk. I will speak of wine and strong drink. I will speak things intoxicating to you. I will speak things that get you going. I like that guy. He's as pissed as I am, as afraid as I am. I will speak of wine and strong drink. And that person who speaks of intoxicating things and knows how to draw a crowd, that person will be their preacher. It's in the text. That's the story we're in. That's what I think. Exhausting.
Yeah. There's something, you know, even though like we both talked about being a little bit exhausted and down from reading this chapter, there is something encouraging about knowing that this has been going on for thousands of years and, you know,
absolutely.
And we can recognize it when we see it, you know, it's kind of, and it's also, there's these patterns that happen. And you might have more to say about this too, but I see patterns that happen where we can predict. You and I have been around enough to know exactly what will happen. And I bet money on this, you know, that what will happen to Boland's church, to Hellscape Church or whatever it's called, is that, so what happened is he's bought a huge complex now. So there's this thing in ministry, you know, what you win them with is what you will keep them with. So he grew to 1500 people by giving them a certain sort of thing and keeping them angry, keeping them scared, keeping them conspiracy minded, you know, and he now has bought this huge complex. So it's not even going to be easy to back out of that. Like if he does wake up in the middle of the night one night and say, wait a second, I've been leading these people astray. Well, now he's got this huge mortgage. He's got all of, you know, he's invested in this. What's going to happen, you and I both know, because we've been around, is that this is a freight train that is headed for a wall. This church is going to hit a wall at some point. We don't know exactly what it's going to look like, but there's a collision coming and a whole bunch of people are going to get hurt. And I know exactly what will happen after that, because you and I have both seen it, which is Bolin will do this repentance tour where he'll get interviewed. Maybe he'll write an article. Maybe he'll write a book where he's repenting and saying, oh, if only anyone had warned me, if only I had known that I was letting things get out of control. I got too focused on building the kingdom in this way. And I ended up doing damage, and only if I had known. But now I understand. And then he'll start another ministry where he fleeces people in a brand new way. Maybe that's cynical, but I think we've seen that. So
I don't. Yeah, I don't think it is. I think it is realistic. I doubt. I don't know if it plays out the way I think it will, and the way you just described. I would use a different metaphor. And it was in the chapter subtly. He didn't use these words. But Bolin, when he discovered this crowd he could draw with this message, created a monster. Okay, he's like, wow. And it's awesome. But now you got to feed it. Now you got to feed it. Because they're there. What you said, they come, what they come for is what they continue with. Yeah. Now you got to feed that monster. And somewhere halfway through the chapter, Alberta was talking to him and Bolin was having second thoughts. Can't have second thoughts, dude.
Yeah.
He can't have, if he starts thinking about his life, okay, there's two things, the congregation, the sheep, the people. Okay, that's one. The other is him. He's headed for a well, personally.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about judgment in hell. I'm talking about if he ever wakes up to the fact that feeding this monster is ruining his life, he might need a sabbatical.
Yeah, right.
Because I had doing stuff like that, not this message, but
right.
I agree with you, Pat. It's not going to go well. I don't know if he's going to go on a repentance tour, but you're saying that because you've seen it.
Right, I've seen it. I'm being cynical because
I know.
I think the appropriate response to what we've seen from this sort of thing is, if not cynicism, at least skepticism. You know, I mean, I'm very skeptical that anything good is going to come from this church. And I think a lot of really bad things are going to come from it. It's just, we've just seen the patterns, you know. So yeah. Is there anything more that you want to say about this chapter before we set up the next chapter?
The only thing I would say, and we haven't, you know, maybe other chapters will allow us to get into this more deeply, but I see two things here. There's this thing that happened with Bolin when he stumbled on this thing that he realized could help grow a pastor, grow a church. Mm-hmm. And it's bigger than 1,500 now, I think.
Yeah.
But that goes into this whole thing that's in the culture, evangelical culture, of the celebrity pastor. Another discussion. But so there's that dynamic of what do you got to do to get really big and get known and blah, blah, blah. But the other thing is the complicity of congregations, because when my people love it so, there are people who are complicit in the celebrity status of their pastor because they get some sense of we're on the right side. We're really fighting back. And it's a symbiotic. I have a friend who used to call it two ticks, no dog. And so they're just kind of feeding off of each other. My ego is being stroked because I got all these people and they're saying, you better keep saying that stuff because that's why I'm here.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I think it's a warning, you know, and it's, maybe I'll be wrong and we'll, you know, 5 years from now, we'll look at this church and say, oh my gosh, it's incredible. But no, I mean, it's so obvious what's going to happen.
I don't even care if it's still around.
Yeah.
I don't even care if it's five times as big.
Right.
If it's this, it isn't good. I don't
care.
It's
terrible.
Besides.
Yeah. It's
that's another conversation because
we
sometimes assess success in the culture, but also in the church on how big it is. And so I don't care.
It's
big or not.
Matter. Yeah. So so next time we talk, it'll be about chapter 8, which is, you know, it's talking about this David Barton that you mentioned earlier, and he shows up at the end of chapter 7. That's why you mentioned it. But David Barton is a guy that maybe a lot of our listeners have read his books. I know that 30 years ago, maybe something like that. I read a couple of his books and I was like, oh, wow. Or watched a couple of his videos that he put out. And I was like, oh, this is incredible stuff about the history of America and stuff. And then, but I, even at that time, I thought, this seems kind of weird. Like, this seems a little off, but it was, but I was young and I was like learning. I'm looking forward to talking about him and talking about his ministry and this tour that he's doing, which chapter 8 is all about. Because I think it'll be really helpful for people to know who this guy is, because he's kind of everywhere. And I would be very surprised if a lot of people who are listening to us haven't read his books. And I think it's a good thing to talk about. So that's going to be next time. So
yeah, what I would say, Pat, about next time and the next time, I had a football coach in college who would ask him, like, what are we doing in practice tomorrow? And he'd go, more of the same, piled higher and deeper. That's the next chapter.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. So thanks, Dave. Thanks for doing this.
You bet.
All right. See you next time.
You bet, Pat. Enjoyable. Yep. Thanks.